There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into NFL Friday here from WFUV's Rose Hill Studio. I'm Griffin Stevenson, joined to my left by Will Jing, to my right's Lou Orlando. That intro is probably the most hopeful anyone will sound about both New York NFL teams this season. I just want to say I usually highlight this when I host for other podcasts like FUVFC. It's my first time on NFL Friday. I'm super excited.
Boy, Griff.
Yeah, should be a fun one. We had a lot of good games in week four. Week five looking solid. But first, Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Normally at this hour I'm sleeping, but actually today I've been up for more than 3 hours. So
that's crazy.
I'm awake.
Why are you up at 6?
I was up. I was awake by 5:40 actually.
Jeez, wow.
Because I went to bed before 10 yesterday.
Honestly,
that was super tired.
Admirable. Don't know the last time I can say that.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, let's go back. 9 a.m. podcast. A little early.
I mean, even Friday, when I came back from Italy and I was jet lagged like crazy, even then I wasn't up at 5:40. So
I feel like, though, this is like when we set the time of 9 o'clock, I was like, this feels like a true NFL Friday. It's like a Friday morning.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like Good Morning Football, and I'm locked in. Like the slate, last week's slate, I'm excited. I'm amped up. I'm ready to go. Not tired, fatigued at all. Yeah. Hanging out, man.
Well, let's start with one of the aforementioned New York-based NFL teams. The New York Jets this Sunday fell at home to the Denver Broncos 10-9. We had a couple of FUVers there, actually, because Evan,
of course,
reporting, and then Zach Cordova,
ooh,
our resident Broncos fan, was
right
in attendance.
He was there for the Broncos.
He told me he got soaked. Obviously, a very low-scoring game. It was very, very damp, I would say, at MetLife Stadium. But the Jets lose to the Broncos. Both teams, Broncos and Jets, sit at 500 on the season. The Broncos managed to win with Bo Nix going 12 for 25 with 60 yards and one touchdown. I think the biggest story of this one is people are starting to question Aaron Rodgers' relationship, particularly with not only coaches, but his wide receivers. There were plenty of moments where I know he had Alan Lazard on a potential like hitch route, and he threw it back, and it seems like there was those frustrations. Aaron Rodgers was almost motioning to the camera and making those like Jim Halpert eyes of like, did he just miss that? And they clearly have a lot to address before what we'll get into later is a matchup against the Vikings in London. But Will, you are the resident Jets fan right now in this studio. What did you think about this one?
I think, well, first of all, let me say it was an embarrassing, piss-poor performance by the offensive and defensive lines. Zero sacks and just too many sacks allowed. And just, I mean, it was bad. And I get that there's a lot of, like, doubt around Aaron Rodgers and his relationship with his teammates. But I don't know, can I really blame him? Like, that's what I really got to ask. Can I really blame him? I mean, he still had a decent game. I mean, 225 passing yards. Not the end of the world, I think. I mean, Breece Hall, 10 carries, 4 yards. I mean, Jesus. Like, I feel like Aaron Rodgers is, if anything, the one guy you don't really blame here.
Yeah, here's where I kind of wonder, because I think the coaching staff 100% you call into question. We don't know, or I think we kind of do know, that maybe Robert Saleh is not the best coach. And it's at least certainly up for debate if he has what it takes to be a head coach at this level. I think you can call into question Nathaniel Hackett as well in OC. He failed in Denver.
Yeah.
This wide receiver room Garrett Wilson's a phenomenal talent. Alan Lazard proved that he could do it in Green Bay. Mike Williams proved that he could do it in San Diego / Los Angeles. That's a wide receiver room that should be able to get on the same page with Aaron Rodgers. All this talk in the preseason about Rodgers missing camp, not going to certain workouts, not going to certain events, like, I don't know, you wonder if that played an effect for a guy that missed all of last year and didn't have that time to get on the same page with his wide receivers, because it's right, they do look out of sync. Garrett Wilson is not playing, I don't want to say he's playing awful, I just don't think he's playing at the level you expect of a guy that I'd probably confidently say at his best is a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, certainly should be.
I mean, you mentioned it, I think going to training camp would have, or preseason camp would have definitely helped Aaron Rodgers.
I don't think it's necessarily fair to pin it all on Rodgers, but I think like we can certainly call into question the coaching staff and whether it's good enough. This wide receiver room should be good enough.
Yeah.
And maybe it is play calling. I've seen a lot of bad OCs in my day that can just destroy an offense, and maybe it is that just Hackett's offense, what they're running, it isn't imaginative enough. It's not what Rodgers wants to be running. But Rodgers brought Hackett here for a reason, so you'd think that there's something in that offense that he wants to be running, which, again, makes me think when you see him look towards his wide receivers that way, have tense conversations with Garrett Wilson and some of the other guys, that it's not stuff that you want to be happening in week four. I know week four is still early, but this is a Jets team that we're going to judge kind of right off the bat and how they look.
And, I mean, it's never good when Aaron Rodgers is rushing for more yards than your star running back and has the longest rush on the day out of any running back on your team. I think that's a recipe for disaster. I think especially the offensive line in particular was something that was the main concern for the Jets going into the season. I mean, like at the end of last year, I think they had the second worst offensive line in the league, and then they made a pick in the draft first round, and then they signed some players, but it doesn't seem like it's taking the insanely desired effect that many Jets fans thought it would have.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, again, allowing 5 sacks from the Broncos, and then just looking at the way just Aaron Rodgers didn't have a lot of time on a lot of those throws, a lot of the runs were getting stuffed. I mean, like you said, I mean, Aaron Rodgers had the most rushing yards. I mean, in a game where, listen, without Cortland Sutton for the Broncos, they have 0 net receiving yards. In a
that's
game
crazy.
Like that,
that's insane.
He had all basically 60 positive yards. In a game like that, you have to win. And I think that the fact that they didn't just shows that this team needs to get their stuff together.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that'll conclude our little talk about Broncos and Jets.
I do want to ask, like, where are you at right now in terms of, I assume the season's not, like, you're not like the season's over, but that has to be a hit to the Super Bowl hopes when you lose to the Broncos.
Oh, that was gone after week one.
Super Bowl hopes were gone.
I saw they played against the Niners. I mean, that's a Christian McCaffrey-less Niners.
Yeah.
You're not making it to the Super Bowl like that.
Valid.
Now, at this point, just like, listen, if the Jets make the playoffs, I'm happy.
All right, fair enough.
I think playoffs is what a lot of teams can be.
I think the Jets should, like, this Jets team should make the playoffs, and if they don't, that's a disappointment.
The AFC is pretty good, though.
I understand.
Okay.
But you brought in Rodgers for this reason.
True. That is exactly why they brought him in. Jets, I think, for many people, surprisingly, might be doing worse than some may have expected preseason. Moving now to a team that I think no one expected to be as good as they are right now. The Minnesota Vikings pick up their 4th win of the season against the Green Bay Packers, 31-29. The Vikings move to 4-0 on the season as the Packers fall to an even 500 at 2-2. Sam Darnold continues to cook, 275 yards, 3 touchdowns. Jordan Love also had a lot of, like, he was doing a lot, but it was very, very sort of wishy-washy. 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions for nearly 400 yards. It's kind of it's almost a Jameis Winston stat line.
I was
going to
say, it's a Jameis stat line.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's a Jameis stat line. I mean, his first game back from injury, but I want to start off with the Minnesota Vikings. This is another one where they honestly could have ran away with this a lot. Like, the score line is a lot more flattering, I think, for the Packers than it could be, and this sort of happened last week for Minnesota where give up a little bit of a – it was your last week or 2 weeks. I can't.
The 49ers.
Yeah,
they were big.
Yeah, week two against the 49ers. They came back a little bit. I think that's something you got to be worried about if you're a Vikings fan. But Sam Darnold, in my opinion, is playing like an MVP. Vikings undefeated when they win the turnover battle. They do that again for the fourth week in a row. This team is firing on all cylinders, and I don't really know right now if there's a team better than them. Maybe not in the league as a whole, but the NFC.
I mean, I'm all in on them. You rack off three straight wins against the Niners, the Texans, and then the Packers. Like, that's legit. I think they've given us reason now to respect the Vikings. My sophomore year roommate is a Vikings fan, so I feel like I always check in on them. We went to week one together. I checked in with him before the season. I was like, hey, man, like, where are you at? Like, Sam Darnold's your starting quarterback. McCarthy's out for the year. And he was like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be great. Like, they've been a revelation. I don't think anyone expected the defense to be this good, this opportunistic. And Sam Darnold, I think if you're playing the game objectively, looking at the box score, like, he is an MVP candidate through 4 weeks. That's awesome. And now you have to give the Vikings respect. They've earned that by rallying off three straight wins against teams that we consider to be the best of the NFC.
I mean, I do think we have to take those wins with a grain of salt, though, because the Niners are not at full strength. The Texans look a little bit weaker than we'd expect, and then Jordan Love's just returning. So I do feel like there is a grain of salt, but, I mean, the Vikings are a lot better than I think anybody expected, and I don't know where this version of Sam Darnold was on the Jets.
I mean, I think it really goes to, like, it's maybe a lot of being a quarterback is what situation you're in, because I would not say the Vikings are the best situation. I mean, you have Justin Jefferson, so that's got to help a lot, but to go from being on the Jets and on the Panthers to being on the Minnesota Vikings probably has to do a lot for you being in a much better environment to have success.
Does anyone remember, like, I think it was two seasons ago? I mean, I'm a Seahawks fan, so I was more tapped in with the NFC West, but Kyle Shanahan, when Sam Darnold was like the third string on the 49ers a couple years ago, said that he thought Sam Darnold's the best arm talent in the league. And that was when he was not starting for a Kyle Shanahan-led team, and he thought that there was just other stuff that needed to be worked on. So maybe,
I mean, right, there was always talent. There's a reason. You don't get drafted that high by mistake. I know there are busts, but, like, even Jamarcus Russell had talent that you could buy into and just had none of the work ethic or anything that comes with it to have success in the league. It seems like Sam Darnold, by all accounts, was a pretty good kid. Even the Jets media, when he was failing there, it seemed like he was a nice kid that was really trying, and just for whatever reason, it didn't click.
I mean, you said that you don't get drafted that high for no reason. I think Zach Wilson might have just entered the chat.
You know what? I'll give you that one. That one I'll give you. That was crazy.
I almost think it maybe turns into a question of, like, is Minnesota, like, the perfect market for someone like that to play in, where it's not, like, where he had probably no expectations.
Yeah,
he was not going to be the starter. It's you have enough star power on your team where it's still you have a solid core around you, but there really is no big city expectations, and it's a city and a state as a whole where they really do get behind their football team. And it's, I don't know, because I'm not living in Minnesota, but they seem, from what I see online, less toxic about their team than a lot of other.
They seem less toxic, but they're also very passionate. Like, they took over the lower bowl of MetLife week one against the Giants, and to see the skull chance go through the entire fourth quarter, like, that was demoralizing.
Yeah. Well, I think we can shift a little bit, talk very briefly about the team that they played in week four, the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, we mentioned Jordan Love, kind of Jameis Winston-esque game. Josh Jacobs still sort of struggling, I think, to really get it going in the offense. I think he's been at the cusp a lot of times of just maybe making that last push, but they definitely leaned on their wide receivers in this one. Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, tight end Tucker Kraft, guys like Romeo Doubs, they all had pretty decent outings, and I think that, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I expected the Packers to be an NFC Championship team. That's what I had going into the year, and honestly, starting the season 2-2, with respect to the fact that they had Malik Willis, I still feel very confident in saying they're going to be an NFC Championship team. I don't know if I'm there,
but I do agree. The fact that they're 2-2 when Jordan Love goes down week one, you lose that game, then you rattle off two straight wins with Malik Willis. Like, that's, again, that's impressive. You're going into your depth. Like, I think the Packers are stronger than I probably gave them credit for going into the season, and I think the NFC North should be a fun one when you have the Lions, Vikings, and Packers all going at it. And, you know, even the Bears, I know I'm not as high on the Bears as I am on the other three, but if the Bears are the worst team in that division, that's one of the best divisions in football. And so that should be a fun one down the stretch. I'm not, like, overly concerned about Josh Jacobs just because I think the Packers at their best are going to be a passing offense. And I think Will's right that Jordan Love coming back from injury, this is going to be shaky. He had a Jameis stat line, but you still saw strong throws in that fourth quarter. You might say it's garbage time, but he gets them back within 2 points of, you know, coming back in that game. So I do hold some merit on that fourth quarter comeback. I think some of his throws down the stretch, yeah, he had a couple bad ones that get picked off, but I think Jordan Love's going to tighten that stuff up, and this is going to be a passing attack that is going to give teams some trouble because that wide receiver room, maybe they don't have that one star, but they got a lot of talent, a lot of depth.
I really don't know if I don't think the Packers are making it to the NFC Championship.
I don't know. I'm not going that high. I think they'll be in the mix for the postseason.
Yes, okay. I agree with that. I just think Niners, Eagles, Vikings, Lions, you start to look at some of the teams.
I do. I had the Lions above them. I have the Lions going to the Super Bowl, I think, when I looked at the NFC landscape going into the season. And part of that is you want to root for them. They're a fun team to root for. But I definitely will say the Packers early on are showing me a little more than I thought they had. And I don't think wild card or depending on how this division shakes up, I think they could win this division.
I think the difference with that, it's a little too early for predictions with me at least, falls. And I really am not big on both the Eagles or the 49ers this season. I think
that's fair.
I think 49ers, I'm just going to say it here first. There is a chance that they don't make the playoffs only because I think, honestly, the Cardinals, Rams, and Seahawks probably get one each against them in the division if they stay this hurt. And
that's controversial. I don't know if I'm there.
Dude, everyone in the NFC West loses that one game that you're just like, why? Like, how? Like, the 49ers lost to the Rams practice squad, basically, already this year. And then the Eagles are just like a mess vibes-wise. But shifting focus to the AFC, Sunday Night Football. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. This was very surprising to me. The Baltimore Ravens absolutely clobber the Buffalo Bills 35-10. It was the Derrick Henry show, if I've ever seen it. Many people have called him washed, old, unk, some might even say. But 24 carries for 199 yards and a touchdown. Obviously took the first play of the game for the Ravens. 80 yards to the house. And I think the Bills were just left stunned here. And, you know, the Ravens started off 0-2, and many were saying...
And that was a bad 0-2.
Yeah, it was a bad 0-2, and people were trying to do the thing where, like they always do, where it's like, this is the amount of teams that have been 0-2 and make the playoffs, and it's definitely not any teams really, or a lot of teams going 0-3 and make the playoffs, and they've bounced back, and honestly, now they've almost catapulted themselves, I think, to look like they're very, very much strong contenders in the AFC, although I will say, if I was them, you just got to put Derrick Henry, like, on ice until January.
I mean, for me, this is the first time I watched the Ravens play and went like, okay, they're worth taking seriously again. Because not that I disregard the Cowboys game. I can't figure out the Cowboys yet. I don't know where we're at with them. They played too close to the Giants last week for me to be like, all right, we're there with them. The Bills, to me, came out strong enough to start the season. I thought they were going to win this game because I feel like the Bills always win these big games in the regular season. They're a regular season team. And the Ravens just dog walked them. That's a big statement. To get Derrick Henry going like that, you can combine that with you already have to worry about Lamar being able to run, Lamar being able to scramble, even throw it downfield. Again, I don't know how you scheme against that offense if it's firing.
Yeah, I think the biggest key to stopping this Ravens offense is obviously stopping Lamar and Derrick Henry. But when you allow them to get 271 rushing yards, you only got 81. You don't stand a chance. And they never looked like they stood a chance. And I guess I'll put out this hot take right now. This is my Super Bowl team right here. I'm taking the Ravens all the way already.
I don't know about that one.
I'm talented. I mean, listen, I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong. Like, that's to take down the Bills 35-10. I don't know how there's too many teams in the NFL that can beat the Bills by 25 right now.
I think
they're one of a handful.
I think if they figure out play calling a little bit better, I think the Ravens have guys. Obviously, Mark Andrews, he had a couple drops. I mean, he's still really not getting involved. What's going on with him? And I would,
but honestly, that's almost more impressive that they've done all of this without supposed to be one of the best tight ends in the league. He's been invisible.
I'd also like to see them incorporate Zay Flowers a little bit like they did in previous years, where instead of trying to maybe do the fancy, more Chiefs-style way of doing the cute little passes, like quick shots, let him run, you know? Let Lamar launch one every once in a while. I think that that worked out well for them last season, and it's something that I know if you're a receiver like Zay Flowers, you want to do. And so I think if they can incorporate that while keeping the stuff that they have right now, then Will, you could be right. I think then they would definitely be a very scary team for anyone, particularly the AFC, to face.
Yeah, I think the biggest key at the end of the day for both these teams is consistency, right? Like, the Ravens lost to the Raiders, so that wasn't a good look. And then the Bills this week. Both teams are capable of winning it all, I think. It's just a matter of who stays consistent, especially down the stretch. And, I mean, Lamar's only lost once to an NFC team, so there's also that to take into consideration. Like, if he gets there...
I mean, who's really blown your doors off in the AFC? Obviously, the Chiefs are undefeated, but I've got some questions about... I really hope they don't do it again. But I've got some questions about the Chiefs. We'll talk about some of the injury stuff with them. Yeah, like, I like the Texans, but I think, like, they're not playing as good as we thought they were going to be. The East, between Tua getting hurt, we just saw the Bills lose. We don't know, you know, about the Jets. The NFC North, there's a lot going on there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's wide open in the AFC.
It is.
I saw a hilarious tweet about the Chiefs a couple days ago, and it was that we'll get into it later. We talk about the Rashee Rice injury, but it was someone saying they should use Sky Moore as just like a guinea pig for ligaments for Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice. Just like a second, you know, people have those second kids, you know, there for the organizations. I saw that. I was like, wow. It's clear that even these Chiefs fans are not confident in some of the guys they have catch a pass from Patrick Mahomes. But
I mean, they're still coming off the year they had Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, it's the Chiefs, man. I think they'll be fine.
They'll be okay.
Switching gears back to the NFC.
Your boys.
My boys, the Seattle Seahawks. Under Mike McDonald, looking a lot better, but on Monday night they fall 3-1 to 3-1 on the season. The Lions advance 3-1 on the season, defeat my Seahawks 42-29. I think the game probably should have been a tiny bit closer than that. I think the big story, I'll get into that in a second, but the big story, Jared Goff, perfect game technically, like on paper.
Yeah.
18 for 18, 292 yards, 2 TDs. But I'm going to say something, and I've actually seen a fair amount of people say this online, so I'm confident. I think it's kind of crazy that Jared Goff had a perfect game, but might not have been the best quarterback performance in that game. I think what I got from this game is that our defense was atrocious. Like, Jared Goff dropped back and just went, whatever, you know? Not a lot of pressure. The Seahawks' entire front four defensively starters were out. I know, pretty big excuse, and you still have to win games. It's the NFL. Like, it's not like you're just pulling dudes from high school to step into that role. But still, it's gonna change things. But Geno Smith, okay, it's a podcast, so I gotta be inciting with what I'm gonna say here. I think Geno Smith is the best quarterback under pressure in the NFL. I don't think he's the best quarterback in the NFL. I don't think he is the most talented quarterback in the NFL, but I think he's the best quarterback under pressure in the NFL. From what I saw, if you like that defensive front for the Lions coming at you, the Seahawks O-line is trash. And I've never, like, honestly, I really haven't seen a quarterback performance, at least from the Seahawks, that composed in forever. And it was not Geno's fault. He had a pick that came at the end of the game.
Yeah, I don't care.
That doesn't count. Honestly, Seahawks should have got the two-point conversion. Don't know why we didn't challenge that. I'm not going to blame the refs for not calling it, DK's knee being down. I'm going to blame us for not challenging that because you have dudes who are paid to just look at replays and do that. Then you have two offensive holding calls on the same drive where we were marching and going to tie the game, I'm pretty confident in saying. The Tyler Lockett one, I guess. The DK Metcalf one, I'm a little bit less inclined to be like, oh, that's the right call. Both by the same ref. People were complaining all game. I know it's cheap to complain about the refs, but I think if those don't calls don't go that way, the Seahawks tie this game. 2-point conversion, we challenge it like we should have. And all of a sudden, it's a tie game. And I think that that, honestly, the way the last few matchups have been going between the Seahawks and the Lions, would have been, I would have been leaning towards the Seahawks win. But I think it's a weird one where both teams, I think, like, I walked away from this one as a fan being like, okay, great. Can't wait to play the Lions in the playoffs. I have a new rivalry. I'm salty. But it's kind of a good result for both. It's a good loss for the Seahawks, and I think it's a good it's a good win for the Lions.
A lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
A lot to unpack. I guess let's start with Geno. Listen, the interception I think really ruins this stat line. I don't care about it. It's the end of the game. You're taking an end zone shot. You get picked off. You have to shoot for the end zone there. I don't really care. Like, he had a great game, almost 400 yards. And you're right. I think he probably had a more difficult task than Jared Goff when you consider the pressure that he was facing from that Lions D-line and Lions defensively all game, and also the task of the Seahawks, which was they needed to fight back into that game through the passing attack. They're down, so he has to throw the ball 56 times. Jared Goff is a much easier task there where he can manage the lead. He can lean on Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery. I won't go as far as say that Geno Smith was the best quarterback in that game, because Jared Goff did his job to perfection. He didn't need to throw the ball more than 18 times, but when he did throw the ball, he was perfect. Was it easier? Was his job easier than Geno Smith's? Not just almost, even in the game plan, but play to play, because he's facing less pressure. I don't think the Seahawks defense did a very good job. Yeah, but Jared Goff had an awesome game. You raise some valid points, but that's also like, hey, that's football. I generally agree that if these two teams met again, the score is probably closer. If it's a playoff game, it's probably a fumble.
Yeah, I mean, even the DK Metcalf, like, there was a lot of, there was a couple moments in this game where it really was, like, it was a poor defensive game. I think Grubb for the Lions, their defense coordinator, not exactly the best defensive coordinator I've ever seen. I think, why are you playing man still when it's that close of a game and in the fourth and you've been torched by man the whole time? I don't know. These
are two teams that if they want to go far in the playoffs, and I say this knowing that I really like the Lions, and hopefully they prove me wrong, but it's going to be based on what they can do offensively, because I'm not entirely confident that either the Seahawks or the Lions have a defense that can come up with stops against, if we're going to talk about the best teams in either conference.
Well, I was pretty confident going into this one, I mean, until the injuries happened, because, I mean, they were having, the Seahawks defense was having a really, really good start. Granted, that's against Bo Nix, Skylar Thompson.
Take with a grain of salt.
Yeah, definitely have to take it with a grain of salt, I think. But I say it's a good loss only because it shows the team what they really need to adjust on. I think that's why I like having the new coach in Mike McDonald, because Pete Carroll, and offensively, when we had Shane Waldron, thank God he's on the Bears. But, like, this is a new coaching staff now that's ready to make adjustments, and that's what they're there for. And Mike McDonald has even said in games that we've won this year that, like, oh, we need to be better. But, listen, the passing offense was firing on all cylinders. The running attack was amazing, which I thought at the beginning of the game it was not going to be. Kenneth Walker is great. DK Metcalf, third straight game with 100-plus receiving yards. Probably going to be a fourth this week. And, I think it's just...
Chill.
I think we need to see what happens the season. Obviously, I think games like the Niners on Thursday are going to be big for seeing the character of the Seahawks teams. But I think we'll see this matchup again in potentially a divisional round. But Will, we haven't talked to you much about this game. What did you see?
I mean, I think you're right. It was a great game from Geno Smith. I'm addressing you, Griffin, because the viewers can't see that I'm looking directly at you. But I think at the end of the day, I'm with Lou that it was a better game from Jared Goff. I mean, if you can't really beat 18 for 18, 100% completion rate. I think the Seahawks are going to be all right. I mean, as you said, you know, injury plagued a little bit, but I think they should make the playoffs. I think the Lions will too.
I think we'll win the division.
Huh?
I think we'll win the division.
You know,
them or the Niners.
Keep making that point. I just don't know if I'm there.
Listen, it depends on when CMC comes back. That's the best player on the Niners.
No, but that dude has double tendonitis. Like, I don't think you don't go to Germany if you're not like if it's not ropes. Like,
right, but the Niners were led to a Super Bowl by a guy that wasn't even supposed to be a starting quarterback. He's their third string, last pick of the draft, Brock Purdy. Both their quarterbacks go down here. Here's Brock Purdy. They get to a Super Bowl. Like, Jordan Mason, again, we're talking about, I understand Christian McCaffrey's the game.
No, Jordan Mason's good.
But running backs, again, it's the most replaceable position. And Jordan Mason isn't having a bad season.
Okay.
49ers are going to have to do, they're going to have to adjust and be able to account for the fact that they don't have Christian McCaffrey. But they should have enough talent to win the division with or without.
But Debo's hurt. Ayuk sucks. One of their best interior guards tore both of his triceps. Like, listen.
They have some issues.
The Niners will beat us one game of the year. Do I think it's going to be at home on Thursday in week 6? No, I do not. But
we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. But honestly, I think the Seahawks have enough games where when it gets tough down the stretch, hopefully the Niners drop a couple more. And I mean, I would love it to be a close battle, but I think 11 or 12 wins should lock in the division. But I think 11 might be a tie. I could see. I don't know. I think the Seahawks were like a 500 team last year, but there was a lot of Pete Carroll coached games that went interesting. Like I remember one against the Bengals where if we just would have, I think we went for it on fourth down like 3 times and are in the red zone, and if we would have just kicked field goals, would have won the game. So we'll see. Switching now to another potentially future playoff matchup. I had it down in our rundown of, we'll talk about it like more if it's a good game. And, oh my God, the Falcons and the Buccaneers put on a show on Thursday night. My roommate is a Falcons fan. I saw a tweet. He talked to me. There were rumblings of Kirktober. That this is his, that October is the month that Kirk Cousins just pops off. And so far, the rumors are true because Kirk Cousins threw for 500 yards with 4 touchdowns and only 1 interception.
He's legit.
Not a bad day for balling. Baker Mayfield either. 180 yards, 3 touchdowns. But, wow. That's a statement win for the Atlanta Falcons. Picking up the win at home 36-30 in overtime.
I mean, they've had a couple statement wins now. Like Kirk Cousins, I forget how good he was before he got hurt last season. That comeback win, again, I know aided by Nick Sirianni against the Eagles, but we'll get into this as well. The Buccaneers, I think, certainly played a role in the fact that they allowed the Falcons to win that game, the fumble mismanagement in the final 2 minutes, but it all comes down to Kirk Cousins led that team down the field to tie the game and then to win the game in overtime. Falcons just have a little bit of that, like, late in 2 minutes, you put the ball in Kirk's hands, he's going to take you down the field.
I mean, definitely. I think Kirk is very much, like, someone who... They brought him in because he has experience, and they know he can be good. I think some complaints... Will, ask you this. The only question and the only fear, and I think it's tough for Kirk that we're still talking about this, even though he just put on a dominant display, is his age and mobility. I think we're playing in an era where even some of the best quarterbacks sit in the pocket now can still get mobile, and that's not really something that Kirk brings to the table, I would say.
I don't think it's a problem if you're talking about them making the playoffs. I think that's only a problem when you talk about do advance beyond just wild card round. I don't think the Falcons are that good. What's interesting, though, is that this Kirk Cousins' performance reminds me of their backup that they just drafted. It reminds me of Michael Penix. Like, that was an insane game. I mean, just 477 receiving yards is nuts. It was like a weird, like, contrast, because the Falcons got a lot of their offense done through the air, and then the Bucs got a lot of it done on the ground. But at the end of the day, I think both teams are going to be in contention for that NFC South title, which has been, like, pretty weak for the past few years, I would say. So, but just going back to what you said about Kirk Cousins, I don't think it's going to cost them enough to where it's like they're going to sink below where they're expected. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the Falcons also have a pretty good defense that'll help them out. We saw it against the Chiefs early on. I think that whether it's kind of a joke or not, I think the Falcons now have gotten their primetime games pretty much out of the way. And that was always the thing that Kirk Cousins seemingly struggled with. And so
yeah, he stepped up to the task. Yeah, like, here's what I do wonder is I think both of the comeback wins I'm thinking of when I think about Kirk Cousins showing me, like, he's back when the game matters, he can step up and ball. The Falcons don't get those wins without help, right? Like, if the Eagles run the ball on third down instead of passing it to Saquon and that pass doesn't get dropped, like, that game is over. The Falcons never have that touchdown drive to win the game. In this one, if Bucky Irving doesn't fumble or if the refs don't miss a face mask on Bucky Irving later, if the Buccaneers are able to get a field goal instead of having to punt at the end of that game, the Falcons don't tie it up with a field goal, that's a loss. Like, this is a game the Buccaneers should have won. At the same time, the Falcons were very opportunistic, and they've been very opportunistic when teams make mistakes in the late going. So I'm kind of torn between, like, if the Bucs and the Eagles execute better, we're not talking about a 3-2 Falcons team. We're talking about a 1-4 Falcons. They very easily could be 1-4. And I think that's scary when we're talking about, are they a playoff team? Are they a good playoff team? At the same time, I don't want to knock a team that, when the going was tough, they stepped up and they found a way to win those games.
I agree. I think that's where it falls on the coaches to step back and say, hey, good win. Like, we got the win, but you guys can't act like you guys are now all of a sudden right. All of that. Like, here's, and say what you said. Like, if Bucky Irving has a fumble or if the refs don't miss this call, we lose this game. And so they, like, Falcons still need to focus up. I saw something that Kadarrell Hodges, who's caught the game-winning touchdown in overtime, it's his second ever career touchdown, which that's got to sting if you're a Bucks fan.
I mean, they're going to have Bucks. They had an awesome offense. I'm so in on Baker. That defense was Swiss cheese, and it's going to be a problem for them. Like, it's reminiscent of the 2022 Fordham Rams offense led by Tim DeMoret, where the offense was so good the defense couldn't get stops. It doesn't matter how strong Baker Mayfield and the offense is. You have to play a little bit better defensively. I don't think the Bucs are ever going to be a top 10 defense this season, but you have to give a little bit more. The missed tackles they had down the stretch, you just, like, that could be the difference between whether or not they make the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, that'll sort of conclude our wrap-up recap section of this week's episode. I think a lot of great games. I think
it's an exciting slate. We're off to a bang with week 5.
Yeah. The week 5 is showing a lot of promise, and there's an extra time slot in week 5 this week, 9:30 a.m. for us on the East Coast. But that's because we are going across the Atlantic, or the NFL is going across the Atlantic, but WFUV is also going
across the Atlantic as well.
Brendan Schorey will be in attendance as the New York Jets take on the Minnesota Vikings. These are two teams that we've talked about so far this episode. Will, before Lou and I say anything about this one, I'm just curious your thoughts as
the mindset.
Yeah, what's your mindset as a Jets fan going into this one?
Don't make it a good loss, not a bad loss. That's really the mindset, I think. I said it before, I think, when we were back there where Angel is right now. I mean, I think as a Jets fan, realistically, we're going to get smacked, like, bad. With the way the Vikings have been playing this year, the way that the Jets have been playing this year. Just make it so that it at least looks like we're improving as a cohesive unit as a team, so that going forward we can get some more wins. Like, basically, as I just said, don't make it a game where it looks just, like, completely lifeless. Aaron Rodgers is yelling at the whole team. No one knows what the hell they're doing. Don't make it a loss like that.
I mean, yeah. For somehow the line is only -2.5 for the Vikings. I don't know if that's just because it's, like, a London thing. But
I think that's a big factor. Like, London games are weird. You don't know which team's going to show up. But I've been a New Yorker my entire life. I like to think I kind of know the way things go here and the script. There's nothing more Jets than future Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers, big trade acquisition, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time from a talent perspective, getting beaten by former Jet Sam Darnold. Like, that's the Jets script.
Oh, yeah, this is a revenge game.
It's a revenge game. And, like, that would be the most Jets thing ever, is Sam Darnold, the guy that the Jets gave up on, and honestly, justifiably so. It was like a failure in New York. They had to give up on him. They had to go elsewhere. They probably didn't have to replace him with Zach Wilson, but, you know, c'est la vie. There's nothing more Jets, first off, than Sam Darnold just having success elsewhere, but then coming back and taking them down in the London game and maybe even, like, bashing their heads in.
Yeah, and the one thing that I didn't touch on in the when we recap the Vikings match against the Packers, which I want to talk about really quickly, is, I mean, I thought this a lot going into the season, whether it was going to be McCarthy or Darnold starting, but Justin Jefferson is QB-proof, and he makes his quarterbacks better. Justin Jefferson might be the most talented receiver like the league has ever seen, at least when it comes to, like, a technical standpoint.
So good.
His catching technique is insane. And Sauce Gardner has not been playing as good as I think many thought he would going into the start of this year. I know that because I'm on Seahawks Twitter, and it's very toxic between Tariq Woolen and Sauce Gardner. And Tariq Woolen was winning that matchup for a lot, and then he got sat down. He got sat down by Amon-Ra St. Brown and Dan Montgomery and all those guys. That's but I think Justin Jefferson, listen.
I'm hyped for this. I want to see Sauce shadow J-Jet is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, that would be awesome.
And he'll be in his shadow when he catches a touchdown pass. You know, but whatever. Can we all agree who we think is going to win this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have Vikings. I'm curious to your point about what this game is going to look like. Because I think it could be close. The London games are always weird. I think that's important to keep in mind. I'm just really curious to see what we see from the Jets. I know we just spent a lot of time talking about how that Broncos game was unacceptable. I do think, I don't know what the Jets' ceiling is, I think it's better than what they did last week. Like, they have a lot more in them, and I think we've seen it in a couple of their wins so far. Like, they're a more talented team than the team that lost 10-9 to the Broncos. Are we going to see that against the Vikings is a completely different question.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're going to have to wake up early for that one. And
you know what? Because I'm amped up for it, I'll be up.
Yeah, and tune in to Brendan Shorey's Twitter feed. Because I know, I mean,
I'm very excited.
He did the baseball. He got great coverage for the MLB All-Star game. He's surrounded by just great guys in London. I know. He's just guys, just solid dudes. And I know he's gonna be amped, and it's gonna be some great coverage. Moving on to a AFC North division matchup between two teams on two different trajectories, I feel. It's the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals. And off rip, I'm just gonna say it right now, I think the Ravens smacked them, and I think the Bengals nuke the whole thing. I think there is a possibility that if the Ravens have as much of a dominant performance as I think they're capable of having, especially on the ground against the Bengals at Paycor, I think you don't look on the rest of, I think, not the Burrow era, but the, like, Ja'Marr Chase and all those guys era with confidence. But I don't know. I think this, but then again,
they made a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but then again,
it's very, the Bengals' recent legacy is very complicated.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Sorry, the recent legacy. But then again, Joe Burrow just weirdly, like, is that guy when it comes to these, like, tough matchups. But he's kind of also that guy where it's going to be like a 30 to 35 loss. But Joe Burrow played amazing. You know,
I feel that incoming. I think I think the Bengals keep it close. I think they will, but I think the Ravens do get the better of them at the end of the day. I think, as you said, they're on two different trajectories, and I don't think the Bengals are on a horrible trajectory, but you like,
they'd be 1-4 with a loss.
Yes, but I mean, listen, they one of them was a 1-point loss to the Chiefs. Patriots loss is horrible, but
and you know what? Like, the Washington loss is looking better and better each week in terms of, like, Washington might be legit too. So,
but it shows that their defense is pretty atrocious.
Yes.
And this is honestly probably maybe, like, besides, like, up there with the Lions, of a team that you cannot play with a bad defense. Like,
I mean, the line for the over right now is 49.5, which I think tells you that they think the Ravens are going to go off. They think the Bengals are going to try and match that and keep pace. And it's probably going to be crazy high scoring. Again, I would fall short of a blowout just because I think sometimes these NFC North games, I think they're it's the most electric rivalries in football. These teams hate each other. There's they always feel like dogfights. So, again, I think the Bengals have enough to keep it interesting. And who knows if it's going to be really hard for the Ravens to play as well as they did last week.
Yeah, I mean, it will be, but again, the Ravens are coming off an absolute domination of the Buffalo Bills, and I think Josh Allen's a better quarterback than Joe Burrow, and I think the Bengals are...
Agree.
I think the Bills are a better run team than the Bengals. So.
Agree.
But then
you're
again,
not wrong.
But football works in funny ways. Like, teams that, like, you would think that that experience then against a significantly better team would lead to a dominant display, but who knows? Mm. Now we can finally get into the matchup that...
That's why we're here.
That I just can't wait for. Mm. The Giants head to Seattle, which is just chef's kiss, and take on my Seahawks. And, you know, I always thought, like, Will joked before, since Lou's a Giants fan and Will's a Jets fan, that I'm the only fan right now that can feel confident in their team and solid. And we were going back whether Seahawks are solid or good, and I think we kind of settled on solid. And as a fan, I view that as I go into every week feeling confident or, like, feeling that my team can win. But this week, I just feel like, honestly, and this could, I'm knocking on wood, this could turn out so heavily, but, like, you know those games where when you think about it in the week, it's like there is not a possibility in my brain where this is not a Seahawks win at home, because it's looking like, and I think it might be confirmed now, that Malik Nabers is not playing.
He hasn't practiced yet. It's not looking good.
Yeah, it's very, with the concussion, and I think that Malik Nabers is kind of all they got. And I know the Seahawks defense has been interesting, but
it's a lot of talk, Griff.
It is a lot of talk, but
for a game that has not been played yet.
Yeah, but
I don't even think he's
probably not wrong.
It's not that much of a stretch.
You're probably not wrong.
I don't think it'll be super high scoring because the Seahawks never really tend to, like, it could be like Dolphins-esque, but I think maybe a little closer, like. This gives me like 28-14 vibes, or like,
but yeah, like, or yeah, like Giants probably don't get the 20 points.
Yeah, or like 20, right. Or like maybe 28-17, but like maybe this 10 of those 17 for the Giants come in the fourth quarter. Like, I think it could be that vibe, just because. But I think DK Metcalf gets his fourth straight game with 100 plus receiving yards. Oh, I think Kenneth Walker probably plays well. Geno continues it. Also, I didn't mention this. Geno has the most passing yards in the NFL this year.
That's pretty cool.
That is.
That's probably not good for us.
No.
I mean, here's my problem. I'm a hopeless optimist. And so I'll go into the game thinking they have a fighting shot. Seahawks are not a juggernaut. We lost by 5 to the Cowboys, who, again, I can't figure out. We beat the Browns by 6 with a really strong first half. We lost to the Commanders by 3 without a kicker. Should have beat them. It's been, I don't know. Again, I don't think the Giants are good. And I'm not going to get, really trying hard not to get tricked by them. So you're probably right. The Seahawks do probably win. I think it could be more interesting. We're not too far removed from Colt McCoy going to Seattle and taking them down as the backup. That was pretty cool. I still enjoy that game.
That's the Pete Carroll Seahawks, though.
Yeah, yeah, this is true.
And all I'm saying is I'm looking at the Seahawks injury report right now, and I'm just seeing a lot of estimated to return October 6th of Leonard Williams, Byron Murphy, Boye Mafe.
Oh, you have Leonard Williams?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Leonard Williams is going to have, yeah, legacy.
That's
game.
A revenge game.
Yeah, Uwosu, Jerome Baker. So basically what it's reading is our entire D-line and all of our good outside linebackers are just set to return. Which
I will say the Giants O-line has held up recently, although last week Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence did get hurt at the same time. So that helped us a little bit. The Giants are going to have a tough time protecting Daniel Jones in this game. I think they're going to have a tough time against that offense with Walker healthy, with Metcalf balling, with Geno balling. I'm not anticipating a win. I did. You know, I picked the Giants in the NFL Friday Pick'ems. I put them in the spreadsheet. We ride, we die.
Well, of course, if you did, like, same reason I picked the Seahawks. If you don't, like, what are you doing? Like,
you know, you gotta show up for your team. I don't know. I wish I could have more back and forth banter with you and be like, nah, man, the Giants are gonna give you a fight. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't.
I think they can find a way to win this game. But here's the thing: if the Giants win this game, it'll be partially because they play well, but also partially because the Seahawks would give them an opportunity to win.
Yeah.
If the Cowboys play good, that's a two-score game last week. The Cowboys gave us an opportunity to keep it close, and we did. We should have won the game, or at least had it be closer. I think it's, again, like if the Seahawks play their best brand of football, we're not winning.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a Seahawks game to lose.
Yeah, it is. It is. 100%.
There have been a lot of times where it's been that over the course of recent years for the Seahawks, and they found that way to lose. But I'm excited because I'm going to get to watch this game with the other Seahawks fan at WFUV. 4:25 kickoff, I should be with Chris Carino.
He's a Seahawks fan. That's right. I forgot about that.
I should be in the press box at Red Bull Arena for NYCFC's matchup.
That's right.
On Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
To watch this game. So
that'll
Carino
be fun.
And I can, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun as we cheer on the New York team in blue and then root for the team from Seattle in blue. But I think, again, Seahawks should win. I'm going to be distraught if the Seahawks lose because, again, one of my other roommates
I'll
at the Giants.
I'll bring you right back here next week.
Yeah. Oh, please. But I think now then to a game that I think could go either way on Monday night, it's the Chiefs and the Saints. I think the Saints started off and everyone, including myself, were like, wow, this team could be the best team in the NFL. They were playing like it. And then they kind of fell back to earth with a pair of losses. And then the Chiefs, I think they're 4-0, and it's been a close 4-0, like Chargers game, Bengals game. Like, it is the Chiefs have been scrappy, and I think, but it's just one of those things where, like, it's kind of what the Chiefs do.
They find ways to win.
They find ways to win, but the biggest story for the Chiefs now, I think, going into this matchup especially, is, like, Pacheco's out, fractured his leg. Rashee Rice, like,
it's bad. Didn't,
like,
look good.
Your star quarterback in Patrick Mahomes throwing a pick and then just destroying the knee of your star wide receiver.
It's the worst sequence the Chiefs have had since Mahomes is here. Probably, right?
It could be the worst play in Chiefs history. If they don't, unless they have, do they have a crazy, like, that I don't know? Like,
they just had really bad, the 2010s were really bad. The early 2010s.
No, but just
when,
like,
Dwayne Bowe was their leading receiver, it was a dark time.
But then it doesn't matter. Like, but just like the worst play for what it means for that team and franchise, like,
it's not pretty.
It's not pretty, and I think, I mean, Rashee Rice posted on his Instagram story that he gets his strength from God, and it's leading to rumors that maybe it's not. Like, he just got added to IR, but there's some hope that it's maybe not an ACL.
I mean, when you're praying that it's a sprain or something.
My fantasy
it's
team
not
is praying
a, not
that
a full tear. Because he's the same way that Malik Nabers commanded all the targets for the Giants, and the Giants kind of ran him into the ground. Not the Chiefs ran him into the ground, but the Chiefs correctly identified that Rashee Rice is the main playmaker on this team and fed him the football. And so now you have to adjust, and Kelce ended up being the leading receiver in that game. I think you're going to see an uptick in Kelce's activity on the team. I think you're going to see Xavier Worthy. Like, he is going to take on that wide receiver one role, and it's an exciting opportunity for a young rookie that's supposed to have all the talent in the world, scored two touchdowns in the season opener. Like, he's got some legit talent. Do the Chiefs have enough? To me, it's like they have that winning pedigree where they find ways to win. They're just going to grit it out.
I agree. They're still the Chiefs at the end of the day. I think the Saints, just like all the other teams that the Chiefs have played so far, they'll find a way to somehow keep this close, even though, I mean, they started off good and now they're kind of like falling off. I think they'll find a way to keep it close, but at the end of the day, like, the Chiefs still have Patrick Mahomes. They still have Travis Kelce, you know, Chris Jones, and, you know, whoever else they have, like, that on their team. At the end of the day, they're still the Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to find a way to win.
I'll say this to the Saints, though. I know it's back-to-back losses. It's back-to-back, very tight, one-score losses. You lose by 3 to the Eagles and 2 to the Falcons. And we just talked about how resilient the Falcons have been. I'm not super high on the Eagles. I think that one's probably the worst loss the Saints have had this season. But even that, you lose by 3 to the Eagles, I think there's a way to get past that. So the Saints have proven, even in their losses, that they can play to the game and keep it close. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get a Saints team that's hungry to come out and match the Chiefs, and maybe the Chiefs fall a little flat. You can only take so many injuries before it has a profound effect on your ability to play winning football. And again, I think the Chiefs have a strong enough system and a deep enough core where they can still win football games. But maybe we get to a point this season where it's not, put it in the spreadsheet, Chiefs are winning this game. I think the Saints make it close.
I think the Saints make it close, and I think
I'm talking myself into the Saints.
I think the Saints make
might
it close.
Change my pick.
I think I have the Saints in the NFL Friday. So
I'm
just
really pondering.
Just, but I think no matter what happens after, after that match the following week, I think Devontae Adams gets announced as a Saint. I think.
Interesting.
I think it makes the most sense because when I think
Derek
about
Carr.
When he's going to follow Derek Carr again, it's Schefter reported that he wants to go to a quarterback that he knows, obviously, whether it's Rodgers or the Saints. And I think that when I think about the Saints team, like Kamara's amazing so far this year. They're okay on defense. But the only reason I wouldn't choose them to win a game like this against a beaten up Chiefs team is because I still, like, Rashid Shaheed is decent. But it's kind of like those occasional deep ball throws. He had a lot more targets in their matchup last week. But it's just like if they had Devontae Adams, like, it's like, wow. You know what I mean? I think it makes a lot of sense. And also, the Saints have kind of a track record. I always get on them for the fact that, like, seemingly they don't understand that in a lot of cases in the NFL, you kind of have to be bad to be good. And they kind of just stuck with everything. And their cap is, like, horrible. And they do a bunch of stuff. And so it's kind of on brand for them.
I'll say this for the NFC South. It gets clowned a lot, and it's gotten clowned a lot because it's been one of the weaker divisions in football. Bucks, Falcons, Saints. And even on Andy Dalton, Panthers, they're now interesting. They're not going to be a playoff team, but they at least make the games interesting every week. But Bucks, Falcons, Saints, that's an interesting division and one that really is going to be tricky to predict.
Yeah, definitely. I was eyeing that too when I was looking at ESPN. I was like,
that's
wow, this is going to be really fun as we get to the dying moments of the season. But that'll do it for our Week 5 previews. We're going to do a quick little segment here called Locks of the Week. They do something similar to this on College Gridiron, Dogs of the Week, choosing underdogs that they think we'll cover. But we're not going to get into the spread or anything like that. Just quickly give me a team that you think is going to win and why, and maybe try not to make it like the obvious one. Will, I'll start with you.
Okay. We just mentioned the Panthers, so I'll say the Bears over the Panthers. I don't know if I have a super underdog pick like the super dogs for Gridiron, but I don't know. I believe in Caleb Williams, so I'm gonna go with them. I think the Panthers are trash. I mean, there's not much else to say other than trash. If I was to choose one word to describe the Panthers, it'd be trash. If you look up the word trash in a dictionary, you'd see a Carolina Panthers logo. And the Chicago Bears aren't far off, but I have a little more hope for them than the Panthers.
I still know if they're it's weird because it's like I couldn't be 100% confident.
I'll give you this. You know, Andy Dalton scares me. So that's the Andy Dalton Red Rocket. The Bears probably win, but I'm staying away from Andy Dalton until I see more. I will not bet against Andy Dalton. I was going to stay away from this game as a lock because I was like, it's too easy. But Jacksonville is the favorite going up against Indianapolis. And I don't care if it's Anthony Richardson or Joe Flacco. I don't care if it's Jonathan Taylor, Trey Sermon in the backfield. I think the Colts are winning this football game, and I don't really see that many outcomes where they lose to the Jaguars. The Jaguars, to me, have been a complete disappointment. I like Brian Thomas Jr. I think he's been really fun to watch. But the Jaguars have not. They're one of the few winless teams still left in the NFL. And I think the Colts, just because they haven't blown people away yet, I don't think Anthony Richardson has been as exciting as people thought he would be in the sophomore season coming back from injury. He's had some turnover issues, but this is still, whether it's Richardson, whether it's Flacco, I'm confident in whoever's leading the Colts to pick up a win over the Jaguars. My lock of the week is the Colts.
I think I can respect that. I'm a Colts hater till I die, Joe, just because one of my best friends is a big Colts fan, but I agree. I think they should beat the Jaguars. My lock of the week is a little more controversial, I feel like, but I think the Steelers are going to beat the Cowboys, and I'm fairly confident in saying that. I think the Cowboys, the Steelers' defense is too good, I think, and the Cowboys are just so mediocre, and they have a bad enough defense where Justin Fields should be fine. Like, I think he's been honestly playing pretty decently to start the season, led them to a 3-1 start, and, like, I don't know, the Cowboys just don't have the, like, oomph, in my opinion, to get it done, and I think if the Steelers' defense plays how they have been playing in recent weeks to start the season, there's no reason in my mind why, like, George Pickens and Justin Fields couldn't have, like, a legacy game, and or at least Justin Fields just decides to scramble and the Cowboys just have no answer. Because honestly, the Cowboys probably maybe should have, like, they didn't play particularly well against the Giants. Like,
no.
You can make that.
They did not play a good brand of football at all. Listen, Cowboys hater till I die. Respect.
Well,
love it.
That's my lock. So the Bears,
in.
The Colts, the Steelers are our locks. Lock it in. Keep note of that when you're watching this Sunday slate of games. Man, that was a fun first episode of NFL Friday for me.
Yeah. First one of the season for me. Happy to end. First one of the season for Will. So.
Well, a lot of firsts. It was a great one. I mean, yeah, great to do NFL Friday early in the morning at 9 o'clock. I hope everyone has a great weekend. A lot of exciting matchups in Week 5. Thanks to Angel Ducret behind the board, keeping everything running smoothly. Thanks to Will Jing for joining me. Thanks to Lou Orlando. I've been Griffin Stevenson. Have a great weekend. Remember, NFL Friday is a production of WFUV Sports.